Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 45, Dreaming the Crow.
Hello, I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. And welcome to the third episode in the story of Branwen. Now, this is where the story traditionally starts in the story from the Mabinogion. So you'll recognise this when you start to listen. Hopefully you'll enjoy it too. And if you have any comments, feel free to...
Email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com, or you can use the voice feedback widget on our website and actually record some voice feedback and send it to us and we can play it on the show. And that would be awesome. We love getting voice feedback.
That would be awesome, yeah.
So do we have any news and views?
I was thinking there's going to be an awful lot of people out there now who are either self-isolating or are quarantined. And I just wanted to remind people that if you're at a loose end looking for a good podcast, we have our back shows that go right back to our very first show. How many shows are there now?
There are about, or just under 90, I think, about 88, something like that.
So that should be keep you going for a few hours. Plus, there's some special shows. There's some music shows. I mean, have a look through the back catalogue. There's lots of interesting stuff. So if you don't fancy listening to a whole serial of story, then there's lots of interesting stuff in between. The other thing is we have In Bed With A Druid, which you will find at inbedwithadruid.com. That's our new podcast, there are only two interviews on there, and there's a couple more being done in the next few weeks. Hopefully you'd find those entertaining. Yeah. And of course, Celtic Tomes.
Yeah, and Celtic Tomes.
And what are we reading on Celtic Tomes?
We're reading Religion of the Ancient Celts by J.A. McCulloch.
And what's the other book we've done on Celtic Tomes?
We've done British Goblins by Wirt Sykes.
Yes, which is actually about fairies. Yeah, kind of like not just goblins, is it?
Yeah, it kind of it focuses on the Welsh fairies more than any of the others,
which is quite interesting because I don't think a lot of people know about Welsh fairies.
No.
I think Irish fairies are much more famous, as it were.
And anyway, if you'd like to check out our back catalogue, you can find it at CelticMythPodShow.com/episodes.
That's CelticMythPodShow.com/episodes. So, remind us of what happened in the last show.
His eyes held both sorrow and joy as he gazed at his foster daughter and then at the young king, Clear.
Now, I give my gift to you, my beloved children, and I ask that you weep not at its giving.
But my lord, my father...
Your pride, General, is in the taking of people and gold from other lands. Pride in conquering lands and people. That is not pride, sir. That is lust.
Ah, yes. Now we come to it. Lust. You are indeed the fairest from Albion's shores, m'lady.
I would die first.
Yes, yes. Die first. Proud people. I get it.
After 3 times 9 months, Penarthyn was broken.
You see, your wife has been more than accommodating to me.
By the gods, what are you talking about?
Your wife has come to my bed on more than one occasion. She has come willingly and of her own free will, I might add.
That is nothing to me, you golden buffoon. It is her body and she can do with it what she will. Although, I do question her taste.
soaring raven swooped above the crowds gathered around the great rock of Harlech, bright white against the deep blue of the clear sky. Her thoughts were full of eggs, worms, and insects often found down by the wooden things on the strand. But as the salty wind ruffled her wings, she was distracted by the noise of the people gathered far below her. The flashing of their spears and armor were enough to keep her at a safe distance. She wheeled back higher away from them into the bright sunlit sky, wondering why so many people were gathered there on the hill on this bright midsummer morning. One small group sat alone at the very top, surrounded by warriors and servitors sitting a little way off. The raven's sharp eye identified her beloved Branwen and her family as they sat around a large table filled with food. Oh, how it would be so easy to swoop down and make off with a tasty morsel. Such a shame it was that her memories told her how quick and fast, how sure and sharp the aim of the Dark One was, despite the warnings of his sister. Such a bright light came from these noble men, such a kinship to the sea from the grey-haired one they called Manawydan, that she was almost tempted to land near him. The love pouring from the young sister as she lay on the grass was a tangible thing, but so was the darkness seeping from one of those dark-skinned twins. She flapped harder, pulling away from the hill, and quietly headed away towards the beach at its base in search of rich pickings. Later, she would return to Branwen, the one she had been gifted to by the mighty queen from the south, and tell her of her adventures. Branwen lay on the soft blankets and gazed out over the sea. She listened to the voices of her brothers as they chatted, laughed, and bickered around her. She let the half-heard words wash over her as the sea foam tide does over pebbles and rocks on the shoreline. Her mind soared, much like her magical white raven, over the diamond-like ever-shifting sparkles on the waves, as if kept aloft by their very beauty, dipping this way and that into different memories and dreams long held dear. The stunning and striking beauty of the great rock on which she lay seeped into her very being and brought back memories of her mother, Penarthyn the Fair. They all said that Branwen resembled her so vividly. Her beauty, her nobility, and her long, proud lineage that stretched back to the great Beli Mawr, he who had carved out the greatest kingdom on the island of the mighty and illumined all dark places with the light of his rule. Branwen's beauty, it was said, outshone the stars, and her laughter was like the rippling of the waters of a gentle stream, or the delicate beauty of the song of a nightingale. Her long, thick hair was raven black and tumbled, shining like midnight over her pure white shoulders and breast. Her skin was so fair, so delicate, that her ladies shaded her from the sun's touch, for this noble lady had never gone to war like her brothers, or toiled in the fields like the common folk who loved her so. Her eyes were a brilliant azure blue, and even her brother Bran, as a young boy, had marvelled at his baby sister when she was born, for she bore the appearance of the ancient line of Dawn. Dawn, the ancient goddess who had married the great Beli Mawr, the son of Manogan, in the first union of the Emerald Isle and the Island of the Mighty, and many were the stories of her children on the green fields of Erin. The pure lineage in Branwen shone forth from her as bright as the white raven's flight across the empty sky. Branwen thought of the kingdom of Gwynedd in the north of Wales, and the many mountains and hills of great striking natural beauty it is known for. For ages untold men had climbed their heights, marvelling at the works of the gods and looking out over the bounty of their land, towards the seas of their forefathers and into the often cloud-striped blue skies above them. Truly this was now the land of her fathers, although her own father had died long ago, and she only held small bright memories of him and his love. Branwen and the other children of Hlir knew this land as their own. Her long, slender fingers weaved into the grass, and she carefully and slowly, lovingly, pulled her hand free, letting the blades of grass caress her arm gently and smoothly with a touch as soft as any lover's kiss. This land held her heart tightly in its thrall. None of their past pain and loss troubled Branwen and her siblings, however, as they gathered for the beginning of their midsummer feast, each warming themselves under the bright midday sun, feasting with rich mead and honeyed bread. They laughed together and enjoyed their own company in the sun's warmth, watching as the deep summer shadow slid slowly towards them across the lush pastures of Ardidwy,
that lay stretched out far below them. She knew that this was one of her brother Bran's favourite places. He took great joy in the bounty of the vibrant green of the grasslands rippling far to the south and the north. He could even watch the twinkling and sparkling of the sapphire sea that separated the islands of the mighty and the Emerald Isle. For although Bendigeidvran, Bran the Blessed, was High King over all the islands of the mighty, and the crown of Llundain, that people now know as London, had been placed upon his brow, she knew that this corner of his kingdom, the Cantref of Ardidwy, pleased him very well indeed. Often he would assemble his men about him in the fields of Harlech, for his hosts were so vast that no house could hold them all. Many of the old tribes that owed him fealty held peace with him, not only because he was mighty and ferocious on the field of battle, but because his was a fair rule, and gladly had they chosen him as their High King. Branwen knew that many of the teachers of the old ways were taking their knowledge away, or into hiding. She turned to watch old Pendaran, sitting at peace among the warriors, supping gently at a cup, and she remembered that he had once said, "It is better for the knowledge to go into hiding than be burnt in the bright flames of a new enthusiasm." None of this troubled the brothers either, for Bran was a generous king, just and wise, and if this giant of a man had a weakness, none could easily discern his nature. His deep laugh would ring out often, and his anger was rarely seen. Their seats had been placed on the sun-warmed grassy hilltop by the stewards, and the brothers sat around a long table laden with food and wine, laughed and sang songs with their sister, enjoying the innocent play of Bran's much-loved son Caradog and the youthful Pryderi, their wooden swords flashing as the young mighty warriors strove back and forth across the hilltop. The young Pryderi's attention had been distracted, and he had fallen once more flat on his backside. Branwen was unaware, as she always was, that the boy's warm brown eyes often flickered to the light that was in her, for as she smiled, the hearts of all those around her would glow with warmth. His were not the only eyes that keenly watched the blossoming Branwen, though. Shaded lids hid a dark, desirous gaze, unnoticed by all except the sorrowful eyes of Nissian, who only wished his brother deep peace instead of the torment he always seemed to suffer. Manawydan, firstborn son of Llyr and Penarthyn, his grey beard now only flecked with dark patches, also watched his sister as she began to tease the brothers, and his sea-green eyes seemed to brim with ages of wisdom as she said,
"Do the cares of the kingdom weigh so heavily on your shoulders, my king, that you cannot take your eyes off the ocean deeps today?"
"Take care, little sister, that our brother does not send you to roost back in the castle."
"Oh, you're just getting too old, Manwethan, my dear brother. I expect that the king has probably had too much mead."
"Ha! Never!"
"And needs to sleep."
The dark eyes of Evnissian turned sharply to face the High King, and a shadow crossed the twin's face.
"Perhaps, my lord, the king, my dear brother, is thinking of new wars to wage on our enemies."
Bran turned his head sharply to glare at Evnissian, annoyed for not the first time that his younger brother always seemed to spoil the bright moments, and thunder loomed on his brow. He opened his mouth to speak, but Evnissian's twin, Nissian, spoke first to his twin in words of gossamer featherdown.
"Peace, my beloved twin. You know that the mighty Bran has brought peace unheard of to this land."
"Yes, that may be, but who knows what goes through the mind of a king born in a land of peace?"
"What goes through my mind? I was merely curious about those ships that are heading over the sea to our lands as we speak."
All heads turned to look towards the sea in the direction that Bran indicated, but his eyes were keen, and Branwen could see nothing for several minutes. And then she saw a huge fleet of richly decorated ships. They seemed to be heading from the direction of the south of Erin, and with billowed sails were making swift progress towards their very location. Manawydan stood and shaded his eyes with his hand.
"I do see them, brother, and they seem to be possessed of an urgent desire to travel so swiftly."
"I read it so as well, brother. And I count it as ill-mannered to approach our land so swiftly. Although I see 60 or 70 ships, I count 13 of their bright and most noble sails approaching our shore. Go and tell the men of our court to arm themselves and go down to the beaches. Let us find out what the intention of these warriors may be."
As the sea swelled to bring these ships towards land, one of their number outstripped the rest, its decorations rich and its carvings magnificently wrought. A man stood tall in the prow of the prancing ship with a shield held high in the air. Its boss pointed to the sky in the universal sign of peace. Bran watched Manawydan lead a well-armed force of men to the beach as the lead ship halted slightly offshore and dropped its anchor into the blue waters to hold the ship fast. Manawydan and the other men looked at the ship in wonder. It was truly beautiful, bedecked with banners of many-coloured embroidered silk depicting scenes of great beauty. These ships were truly the work of great artisans, and never had they seen their like. Bran's men walked to the water's edge so that they might hear the words of the men on the ship, but the ship put down boats onto the water, and its warriors made for the land of Wales. As they approached, a herald in the lead boat gave a mighty shout.
"We bring greetings and peace to Bendigeidvran, High King of the Island of the Mighty."
High above them on the rock, Bran could hear the words of the herald, and he listened to Manawydan as he said,
"May the gods give well to you, and be you welcome. Tell me, to whom does this fleet of ships belong? Who is their captain?"
"Lord Matholwch, the High King of Erin, is here, and it is to him that these ships belong."
Bran rose from his seat and stood at the edge of the rock. Branwen stood slightly behind him, watching the bright unfurled sails flap gently in the breeze with great interest. Bran's voice boomed out across the waters.
"Tell me, what is his desire?"
"He has a boon to ask of you, my lord. He does not wish to land unless you will agree to his request."
"What kind of petition does he have?"
"He wishes to ally himself to you, my lord. There is an old tradition of uniting two mighty families by marriage. And if it is agreeable to you, he has come to ask for the hand of Branwen in marriage. With this alliance, he wishes to bind the Island of the Mighty and the Emerald Isle together so that they may become stronger."
Branwen turned to look up at her brother's face, feeling more than nervous. She felt that she stood not only on the edge of the great rock of Harlech, but on the edge of a vast turning point in her life. From this day forwards, nothing would ever be the same again. Bran looked down at her briefly, his eyes softening. Manawydan turned to look back up at Bran, who now looked around at the faces of his brothers. Nissian smiling in warmth, and Evnissian glaring in suspicion, before his gaze came back to the anxious face of Branwen as she looked out at the ships, biting her lower lip in worry. Pryderi watched the face of Bran intently. He could see the thoughts flash across the wide, noble brow of the king like sparks from a blacksmith's anvil. He knew the mighty Bran sought peace, and that it was also the way of the new tribes to make decisions for their women, if they thought they could benefit from it. It was not the way of the old tribes, however. It was their way for a woman to choose her own man, to grant succession and power, much as his own mother had done. It seemed that the new tribes didn't hold much with the ways of the old gods. Bran had much wisdom, though. How would he choose to react to this Irishman? Bran appeared to reach a decision, and he decisively cast his gaze back to the ships, and cupping his hands to his mouth, once more called out to the herald,
"Aye! Let him come to the land, and we will take counsel on this."
"Lord, I will take that answer to my king."
As Bendigeidvran and his court went down to the fields where their pavilions were pitched, and the Irish sailors rowed back out to Matholwch's flagship, they could all hear the rich tones of the Irish king shout out,
"I will come to land gladly."
So Matholwch, the High King of Erin, came with his court onto the green fields of Wales, and met with the men of the Island of the Mighty. There was great joy at his arrival, and much ale and food was passed to the sailors as they were escorted to their own tents in the encampment. The cooks and stewards began to prepare a welcome feast for Bran's noble guests, and everyone knew there was going to be a mighty throng of warriors and nobles assembled that night to celebrate the arrival of Matholwch. That afternoon, the great fields of Ardidwy on the plain of the Three Rivers were filled with a great throng, as the Irishmen put up their tents and prepared to make camp. Matholwch could be seen striding among his nobles, a great flash of coppery red and gold that glinted in the later afternoon sun and found itself reflected in Branwen's watchful eyes. He barked orders and men rushed to obey. He laughed loudly and his men laughed loudly with him. Seeing such a wise and much-loved king shine so very brightly, Branwen's heart began to race a little in excitement. Tonight he would sit at their table and she would hear his words, see into his eyes, and, Her thoughts drifted off into the shifting realms, known only in the dreams of young women as their bodies change into womanhood. Confusing trails left by thoughts swamped by rushing, half-understood emotions. Bran watched her very carefully from his tent, but his own thoughts were not just at Branwen's young heart. As the sun sank over the sea, twilight settled on the two great noble courts. Huge fires were lit, flaming torches were placed on poles in a vast circle around the tables that Bran had prepared for his nobles and all the chief princes of the Irish king, Matholwch. Many others from each host thronged to take their own repasts in many camps around the great circle, each eager to witness this meeting between the Island of the Mighty and the High King of Erin. Matholwch sat opposite Bran and gave him greetings and honour, but his eyes ever strayed to the slender Branwen as she sat shining with her own light in the flickering shadows of the evening. Bran gave the Irish king his own greetings, and they fell to meet. The finest foods had been bought and the feast was filled with friendly faces, wild and free laughter, and many songs of joy.
"So what say you, mighty Bran? Would the peace of an alliance between our two great islands be of interest to you? Yes?"
"Well, that might be the case indeed, my young Irish friend. But let us eat, drink and be merry. Let us enjoy the songs and the tales of our bards, for we have a time aplenty. There is no need to hurry with such an important decision, is there?"
"None at all, noble king. We can always start taking counsel together on the morrow, can we not?"
"Of course. On the morrow it shall be."
The feasting continued long into the night. As the mead and wine flowed more freely, so did the talk of the lush green fields of Erin, the fine halls on the shores of the Red Loch, and the many conquests of the tall flame-haired king. Bran laughed along with all of his jokes, and told stories of his own for each story that came from across the narrow sea. He seemed to ease more and more into the Irishman's company as the night wore on. Branwen quietly and carefully watched Matholwch from under the deep blue headscarf that she wore. She knew well that Bran was hungry for peace and would be likely to agree to this marriage, and so she watched Matholwch and all that he did very carefully indeed. What sort of husband might this strange Irish king make? Would he be kind? Would he be fair? Could she learn to love him? Although she knew that her fate was in her brother's hands, she dearly hoped that he would be wise when they chose in council. Would she be able to bear children to him? Heirs to the two islands, perhaps? She watched him talk, slipping easily from the Welsh tongue when he spoke to the crowd and to the lilting Gaelic of her youth when he spoke to the children of Llyr. Yet still she could not tell. It was all much too soon. She drank more of the rich red wine, and as the evening dove into darkest night, watched the strong Irish king more closely. There were many at that table that watched Branwen as her eyes sought the rich, deep brown eyes of the Irish king for a brief contact, desperate to read his nature from his every action. Her hands wove gentle coils into the long black hair that flowed like a waterfall of sparkling ravens from under her headscarf. At the first hint of the dawn, rays of a bright new day began to colour the tops of the camp tents a light grey. The men in the circle began to drift away to gain some rest before the deliberations of their kings would take place later in the day. Branwen had long sought the solace from her worries beneath her furs, and once Bran had turned his weary feet towards bed, many others felt free to leave the circle. Evnissian watched his twin take a last, long, deep draught from his goblet and push himself up away from the table. He waited but a moment and quietly followed Evnissian into the darkness.
"Brother."
"Oh! Oh, Evnissian, how fare you, my brother?"
"Well enough, brother, but it strikes me that not all as it seems here tonight."
"What do you mean, brother?"
"Well, do you not think it strange that a mighty force from the Emerald Isle lands on our shores and counts up the size of our defences? Do you not think it strange that our brother, the High King, seems to be ready to hear the Irish King's proposal for an alliance?"
"Not at all, brother. We know how dearly Bran desires peace, and if he can unite both the Isles of the Mighty and the Emerald Isle with his marriage, I think he may choose to seal that bond."
"You are naive as usual, brother. You see nothing but good in all around you, and what of Branwen? What of her desires?"
"She'll do as the High King desires, of course. But Bran has not made that decision yet, has he, brother?"
"Well, no, he hasn't.
but I do feel we should keep our father informed of this possible alliance. We did promise him that we would do so.
Well, yes. Yes, we did make him that promise before we came to these shores.
Then we must leave at once and inform him.
Then I'll ask Bran to give us leave to see our father.
Why must you ask him? We should just go.
Because he is the High King, and because we swore allegiance to him as well.
Very well. You go and tell the King of the Island of the Mighty, and I will go and prepare a boat for us.
And so the twins departed on the long sea voyage that would take them to the City of the Eagle, and the children of Clear would think no more of it. It was not unusual for Evnissian to seek the soft, luxurious lifestyle that Bran remembered so well as being the golden cage of his prison so many years ago. It was not unusual either for his loving brother, Nissian, to travel with him and keep the boy out of trouble. If trouble was anywhere to be found, then that was where you would find Evnissian. In our next episode, Bran the Blessed brokers a peace between the two mighty islands, and Branwen gains a husband.
Ooh, good stuff, can't wait. Very exciting.
It is.
Okay, so we've probably got some time for some listener feedback, haven't we?
Yep, we have. We've got a great message from Lane.
Hey guys, my name is Lane and I just found your podcast and I think it's amazing. I love it. I've listened to the first couple episodes and I recently found out that the majority of my heritage is Celtic. So kind of knew it was, but anyways, I'm really enjoying the lessons history teaches us and just hearing about the epic tales is just great. I mean, it's awesome. So anyways, hope you guys have a nap.
Great summer out there. Happy solstice to you. And I don't know, maybe we'll be in touch someday. Thanks a lot for the podcast, guys. Bye.
Thank you for your lovely message, Lane.
And we hope that you really are enjoying the stories. It's good to hear that you've discovered that you've got Celtic heritage. I wonder exactly where from.
I don't know. Wonder if one of these sites, because you kind of get your DNA done, don't you?
And like Ancestry.com, something like that.
One of those. And it's amazing how many people are actually tracing their heritage and finding that there's Celts in there somewhere.
Your heritage done, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Did you find any Celtic heritage?
I did, yes. 21%.
21%?
Yes, well, I actually thought there'd be more, but never mind. There were obviously more British than I thought.
That covers your left leg then?
It pretty much, yeah. I've got a Celtic left leg, that's the way it goes. And before we leave you with our final song, let's hear another promo for another great podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's have a listen to Icy Sedgwick and her fabulous folklore podcast.
Why, hello there. This is Icy Sedgwick, the host of the Fabulous Folklore podcast. Are you fascinated by fabulous folklore, a lover of legends, or a maven of the macabre? If you love weird tales, bizarre superstitions, strange lore, and wonderful myths, then why not check out my podcast and get your fix of fabulous folklore in 15 minutes or less? You can find me wherever you can find podcasts. I'll see you there.
Thank you for the super promo, Icy. The Fabulous Folklore podcast is always short, fascinating, and very informative. It's really good stuff.
And it's well worth a listen. Anytime that you're popping along there, give her a listen. She's covered some really interesting and weird things.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, like the ones she does about people with bells in their coffins, so in case they got buried alive and stuff like that.
Oh, that's spooky. Oh, that could be nightmares.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. To finish off our show, should we have a listen to a rousing track from Dave the Bard?
Oh, it's about time we had a Dave the Bard track, isn't it, really?
I think so.
Okay, let's do it. Go.
Yeah, this one comes from his musical retelling of the first branch of the Mabinogi and is called These Hollow Hills.
Won't you come and walk with me on these hills, these hollow hills? Such a wonder there to see. So the story goes, neath the green and different sky, in these hills, these hollow hills, is where the land of faery lies. So the story goes, all is quiet, all is still. this sacred hollow mound to receive a wonder or a wound. Won't you come and walk with me on these hills, these hollow hills? Such a wonder there to see. So the story goes, 'neath the green and different sky, in these hills, these hollow hills, is where the land of fairy lies. So the story goes, from the day that you were born, and when you heard the hunter's horn, is this free will or destiny? The great folk smiling, it is done, the spell is cast, it has begun, and such a wonder you will see. Won't you come and walk with me on these hills, these hollow hills? Such a wonder there to see. So the story goes, 'neath the green and different sky, in these hills, these hollow hills, is where the land of fairy lies. So the story goes, and as that day back in the glen, the air is still and silent when a vision from across the field, the gates of Annan open wide, a lady on a horse astride, and now the prophecy's revealed. Won't you come and walk with me on these hills, these hollow hills? Such a wonder there to see. So the story goes, the green and different sky, in these hills, these hollow hills, is where the land of fairy lies. So the story goes, oh, won't you come and walk with me on these hills, these hollow hills, such a wonder there to see. So the story goes, beneath the green and different sky, in these hills, these hollow hills, is where the land of fairy.
That was Dave the Bard with These Hollow Hills from his beautiful musical portrayal of the first branch of the Mabinogi. You can find out more about Dave on his contributor page on our website. Fabulous, absolutely brilliant albums Dave has done. And he's, where is he now, number three?
He's working on the third branch as we speak,
I believe. Yeah, he's working on the third branch. I think I heard a whisper that it's nearly done, isn't it?
I hope so.
Okay. So go along and go and have a listen to Dave's albums and buy them and then listen to them on Spotify.
And you can find out where to buy them in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/dreaming. That's /dreaming.
Happy listening. And that brings us to the end of our show. So, before we go, we'd like to wish you many blessings.
See you in our next episode. Húlvár. You have been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. If you enjoyed listening to this show, please come and support us at Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Show. We hope you'll stay tuned for the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com or come and chat to us on social media. All of the links are available on the Contact Us page on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd also like to send out a big shout of thanks to Coolan's Hounds for our theme music, available at sfhounds.com. This show is a Celtic Myth Show production.